holding in Tes Nisan, Siman Kufyud Zayin Halacha Yud Beis. We're going to Kufyud Ches Halacha Dalid. So let's finish off Kufyud Zayin. The last two halachas are still speaking about the benefit of having chametz, but there are exceptions to the rule. One of the exceptions is when a person has a child, a baby, and they have to feed him chametz. Someone asked me the shaila. They had rice. They had that their child is very sensitive. Their diet is very sensitive, and the child is used to eating some type of rice meal. Forgot, and it has kitniot and also possible chametz. I checked with the OU. Nevertheless, because there's a concern that the change of diet is going to cause him to, it could be dangerous for him. The halacha is as follows: you're allowed to feed this child chametz, even real chametz. However, the best way to do it, the Kiddush says, is to give it to a non-Jew. Take him to a non-Jew, and a non-Jew will feed him what he needs, and then the Jew will pay him. Again, it's not so practical today, but certainly in a situation where you have a product that might have chametz, so especially if you purchased it before Pesach, it's about the Bashishim, and therefore takes care of a lot of problems. Now, the kitzah's case is you're telling the non-Jew basically to feed him, and then you're going to pay him afterwards. We already learned the difference between paying afterwards versus paying before. It makes it worse. If the Jew, if there's no non-Jew around, so then the Yisrael has to do it himself, and certainly in a situation where there's a danger. Mishnah Berurah really discusses that one of the best things is before the Jew himself does it, is he asks another child to do so. If there's a type of chametz situation like this, where it's real chametz, then it should be kept where the area that is being sold to the non-Jew. That's what the Piskei Tshuvos writes. It's a little bit complicated to understand how that works exactly. You're selling to the non-Jew, you're not. You're selling only what you're not going to use. The idea is that even if you have to feed the child, you want to make sure it's not yours. So you have in mind that you're not being zeicha in it. You're not taking acquisition of it. Okay, the next halach is also very interesting. Someone asked me this question, do you have to be careful with eggs? Do eggs have to be kosher for Passover? And milk, does it have to be kosher for Passover? So really it's based a little bit on this kitzur. The kitzur says that to drink milk from an animal that's owned by an non-Jew that's eating chametz during Pesach, because if it's owned by a Jew, it's not eating chametz. So some asr and some say it's forbidden, some say it's okay. Now, the Mishnah Berurah really is, I think, more lenient to say that it's okay, especially if it was milk 24 hours after eating chametz and or it's having other types of ingredients. And Moshe also, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was definitely inclined to be lenient when it comes to this question. And nevertheless, the Kitzur says, Shemen Avshay should try to be stringent. Some that's guarding his soul should try to stay away from this, especially when the custom was not to. Today, I don't think of it, first of all, so I actually look to see a little bit more what animals, what cows eat today. A lot of it is really grass and stuff and not even chametz items, but I'm not an expert on that. So that's why I think the custom, especially when you're getting the eggs and the milk, I don't think you're getting the fresh milk, especially if you buy it before Pesach. Okay, Siman Kuf Yutches is the Achanas HaSeder. We finally got to the laws of preparing for the Seder night. Very exciting. So the first thing that the Kitzur discusses is to have special, beautiful wine when it comes to the Arba Kosos. So it's interesting that the beautiful wine is the first prerequisite, meaning to say it actually comes before the idea that it should be red. And in fact, the Kitzur says that if you have red wine that's like as good, as beautiful as the white wine, so then use the red wine. And because red wine has something special. It says in the pasuk, "Atere yain ki is adam." It implies that wine is very special. It's very, when it's red, it has an extra special power to it. There's a chashivas, there's an importance to wine when it's red. That you see from a pasuk in Mishlei. But there's another reason. The other reason is a zeichel to the dam, the blood that Pale, I don't know why it doesn't say yimach shemayi, but he was sheichet. He shechted the Jewish people, the Jewish kids. So it's interesting. The Midrash says that Paul basically had leprosy. He had tzaras, and he would bathe in the blood of the Jewish people to heal himself. So definitely a Rasha Marusha. But the idea also is that sometimes, the Kitzur says, in countries where the non-Jewish libels and the crazy stories that took place of silly accusations that the blood that they took for the wine was, was the blood of the wine, the red wine is from the blood of the non-Jews. So therefore, they stopped taking red wine and they only use white. Now, the also there's a when someone has white wine, there's still an Indian to make it a little bit red. But the best thing is to first put the red wine and then put the white wine. This way, you avoid the shaila of tzivah of coloring on Shabbos. Okay, now we get to. But first of all, the Poskim, by the way, discuss that if someone has a difficulty drinking wine, he certainly can drink grape juice. And in fact, there were big tzaddikim like Chabina, Shlom Zamlaubach, great tzaddikim that had grape juice, I think Chazonish. But Moshe didn't like the idea of grape juice because he felt that it wasn't cheres, it wasn't freedom, it wasn't something of royalty. Okay, when someone is when it comes to kalpas, so the next thing is kaddish uchatz, kalpas yachatz. Kalpas is the first dip. The Gemara discusses this to make the kids ask. First thing is you're starting to dip before you even had the meal. So what do you take for kalpas? So there's many different customs. The kids says the meaning is to take what's called petrozil. Petrozilia is parsley. I don't know anyone who does that. Better, he says, to take celery. That has a good taste when it's raw. Because the idea really is you're looking for something that's not maror. You make berpi adama, so you're going to have it, you have in mind for the maror. And you can use this item as a dip. Now, in order to make a bracha berpi adama, it has to be edible and has to be the good raw. The custom by many, interestingly enough, which is not even mentioned in the Kitzur, is to take potatoes. It could be you didn't have potatoes. There's a whole discussion in the Tiferes Yisrael and in Pirkei Avos when it says Chavadim Shnifel B'Tzelm, they have different inventions, and it discusses potato actually. Who brought potato, I think, to America? I forgot his name. But in any case, so potato, there's another reason why some don't take potato, because two Chassidus, Rufshitz, and I think someone else, I forgot, do not use potatoes because they make shahak on potatoes. They feel, I think, it's more like a root. In any case, the best says the kids is to take a tznon. Now that's a chiddush, because tznon pashup says radish. Must be their radishes were sweeter, because Almoshe says a radish in truth is not sweet, it's pretty raw. No one eats it raw. Again, I don't know if no one eats it, but the majority of people don't eat it, so it would be sha'aka, wouldn't be adama. And then we go to morar. So what do you use for morar? So this already the Mishnah discusses. Karpas is not really discussing the Mishnah, but the Mara is discussed in the Mishnah. What is Mara? Now, Mara is, of course, reminding us of the bitterness that took place in Mitzrayim, that we experienced in Mitzrayim. But the Chiddush is, as we see from the Poskim, and we see from the Mishnah, and the Achrayim explain this, it's not that you need to experience bitterness. It's a little bit of maybe perhaps a mistaken notion, because romaine lettuce, which is the first choice, is not bitter. So some explain, what if you left it in the ground, it would be bitter. Okay, but it's not bitter now. No, but it's better because it's if you're the right sweet and it's bitter. Now the pshat is you're taking something to remind you of bitterness, and that's why it makes sense that the fact that there is a that if you would leave it in the ground, it would be bitter. In any case, the Kitzur first says that the mara we take is tamcha, which is chrein. It's very sharp, so therefore you have to really you have to make sure to grate it with a grater, because if you're not going to grate it, it's going to be very too sharp. First, it could even be dangerous. Now, so you have to use what's called the rib rising, but there's a shaila. Shabbos, for sure, you can't do it. Even on Yontov, some say you should do Bashini. And the Maiser, today's, I saw the Poskim say, today's chayin is so sharp that even if you do it before Yontov, it would still be sharp, and you just keep it in a cup, and you... and you keep it in the fridge, and it would be fine, and even maybe more possible to eat it properly. Otherwise, you could see people's faces, mamas turn red. But in any case, the romaine lettuce is the best, and that's what he says in Chazal Se Chazeres. That's the romaine lettuce. The only concern of the romaine lettuce is always the bug shayla. So today you have all these different bodeks and everything else. Some like to combine the two, and in fact, some say if the lettuce, romaine lettuce, is concerns the bugs, you only use the stalks. An easy way, by the way, we're going to discuss this in measuring the osa the matzahs, is an ounce schnapps cup, or if you're using your hand, your palm. Chaznish used to measure with his palm of his hand, that area of your palm of your hand when it comes to matzah, and also when it comes to maror, because maror also is darabon, it can be more lenient, is around that measurement. In any case, the Kitzur also discusses other types of possible maror. He says there's something called lana, which is called warm wood. And then he mentions ulshin and chachalvina. Ulshin is endives. In his places, he didn't have it. Today, it's much more common to get endives. So some are much easier with endives, like endives. Now, the chiddush also is, the Kitzur says, that all types gather combine. So you could take some of the romaine lettuce together with a delicious white chrein that's in that schnapps cup that you can't really eat the whole thing, and combine the two, and then it becomes really accomplishing both objectives. And the Kitzur says you could be yotze to different parts of the romaine lettuce, the leaves, the stalks, but not the roots. The roots that split this way and that way, you can't use. But the actual main root, the Sheresh HaGadol, he calls it, where the leaves are coming out from, even though it's underneath the ground, is still considered the stalk. Nevertheless, he still says it's best to have whatever's outside of the ground, not inside the earth. When it comes to the actual leaves, you yotze with the leaves when they are moist. But if the stalks are coming, and the stalks, the leaves have to be moist. But when it comes to the stalks, they could be moist or they could be dry. The only exception is they cannot be cooked and they cannot be what's called covered, soaked. And this sometimes people don't realize. I've been in Ashgachas where they're soaking the Roman lettuce in the freezing cold water with ice, because that was one of the methodologies of getting rid of bugs. Not necessarily that's what today most people use, soapy water and this different types of soaps. But the point is that sometimes, I remember, they used to keep it in water for 24 hours. It might get rid of the bugs, but it made it possible for me fulfilling the mitzvah of using the romaine lettuce. And lastly, we're up to the charoises, the delicious charoises. And the Kitzur gives us a great recipe for charoises. He says, first of all, the charoises has to be thick. Zecher to the teat, to the cement that the Jewish people had to use and create in order to the clay to make build the buildings of Pithom Ramses in Egypt. Now, when a person is dipping the maror, that's when he should pour the wine and the vinegar so it should become soft and remind us of the blood. Different explanations of what the blood is referring to. It's referring to the blood of the Jewish children who the Egyptian basically tried to kill. Or the Peshat is referring to the first Makkah. Either way, it's interesting that according to Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the mixing of the red of the liquid is only when you're about to dip the maror. Most people today, they have everything ready before. Now, here are the ingredients. So in the Chalaisis, you have figs, because it's based on Tenach Antafagah, Pasuk and Sheh Hashem, Egoizim, walnuts, tamarim, dates. Remoinim is pomegranates, all based on beautiful psukim describing the Jewish people and their beauty. Apples, tachas atapoaticha, the famous midrash that secretly they were able to give birth and Hashem helped with the children. And shkedim means that almonds. Why? Because chishur lashes is the kates. There's a certain concept of thought process involved. And how Hashem sped things up. Also, to put spices that look like straw, like cinnamon and ginger. I think the people, one of the explanations why people don't do it is because they usually don't have spices around. But certainly that's a real minhag to do. Now, here's the limitations. When it comes to Shabbos, you're not supposed to pour the one and make it into a type of dip, because you have to do it in Bishinui. Smash on Yom Tov, it's not a problem at all. And also the Mei Melach, which is a salt water, which is what you're dipping the carpus in, you should really do before Yom Tov. But if you're doing it on Yom Tov, you have to do it Bishinui, which means first you put the water and then you put the salt. Okay, we're going to hold here.